my calculations are correct, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
It's showtime.
Right, welcome everybody to another episode of the VHS Strikes Back. I am one of your hosts, Chris, and my co-host and very good friend is Dave.
Hey there, Chris, and hello to our listeners out there. Welcome to the VHS Strikes Back, the show where we dust off the old video player and go on a nostalgic journey to look at the good and the bad movies of yesteryear. Now, Chris, what are we going to review this week?
Well, Dave, you're talking about the bad movies last week's offering. Then we're talking about the good movies. Now, this week, it is your pick, and I am literally at the altar of Dave Horrocks on my hands and knees, not doing anything untoward, guys. Just saying, you are not worthy. Steady. You are not worthy. Wayne's World style. We're going back to 1990. It is Robert De Niro, Ray Liotta, Joe Pesci, Lorraine Bracco, and it is Goodfellas. And I can only say one thing, my friend. I absolutely love that you picked this one. So, Dave, what do you remember about this one?
I remember watching it on the video back in 1991 sort of time. And, you know, it was pretty huge at the time, wasn't it? So, not, you know, it was on every other video that you'd get out. There'd be a trailer for this. And so, remember watching it. Remember enjoying it, but not necessarily loving it. I think I said last week that, you know, mob movies weren't really my thing. I think just I didn't have the stomach for the violence, really. And it seemed to me, you know, when you watch movies, I can detach myself a bit more these days. But, you know, for years, I'm always empathizing with the characters. I'm always putting myself in their shoes. And you know, especially when you're watching it when you're a teenager, like your career, your, you know, what are you going to do for a job? Are you what path are you going to walk in life and stuff? And so I just remember thinking at the time, well, fucking hell, you know, it wasn't inconceivable that I could end up on the wrong side of the law back then. So, and I just remember watching this and thinking, well, if you are part of this lifestyle, all right, it seems to be great for a while, but you're not going to leave this life in a very good way. You're either going to be banged up for 30 years or, you know, you're going to get whacked. And I just remember, I just couldn't enjoy it. I couldn't detach and just enjoy it for what it was. And so, you know, you can't avoid Goodfellas. Scroll through Twitter and you will see the laughing meme at some point.
Yeah.
You know, and I've used it many times myself with Ray Liotta. You know, see, and all the lines, you know, you think I'm funny? Like, ha-ha funny? That scene in particular is just, it's part of pop culture, isn't it? And so I haven't gone back to watch the actual movie, but having been on this Sopranos binge in recent weeks, I just had a real thirst for it, you know, because David Chase, the writer and showrunner for that show, you know, was saying without Goodfellas, you wouldn't have a Sopranos. So I was like, right, okay, I'm going to have to go back. And I know that a lot of the actors there made kind of cameo appearances in this as well. And so I just had a real thirst to go back and watch it. And I'll keep my powder dry on what I feel about it, Chris. But how about yourself?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think I didn't watch this till about 92, 93. I think that's when I became really aware of like The Godfather. So I must watch The Godfather first, definitely. And then it was like, just my granddad and, you know, he's still with us, only just, unfortunately, but he loves gangster movies. So I'd always watch them at theirs on video. And I remember this VHS cover. It's so synonymous. Everyone knows. And you take the name away. I've said this on a few things like Cobra the other week. You know it's Goodfellas. You just see like Ray Liotta, De Niro and Pesci. You know what it is. And I was just, I remember at the time watching it. And obviously you've watched The Godfather. The Godfathers was like early to mid 70s, you know, one and two. Really slow, really like the story, the narrative of it all, you know, and I love it. And you know how impatient I am and how I like things, you know, get to the point of things. But with The Godfather, I could sit there all day and just the politics of it all and the fact I just really enjoy it. So with this, it's a slightly different gangster movie, obviously set or made 18, 19 years after, you know, The Godfather. But just, there was just something about it when I watched it. It just was like, holy shit, you know, this is like, I don't know. I just thought it was amazing at the time. The fact that Henry Hill, it was a real story that had been adapted for a movie and that, you know, he was still alive when I watched it as well. It's just something. And obviously we didn't have the internet at the time. I remember reading like articles in like the papers about him and all that, how he'd gone into hiding. Then his anonymity came back out of hiding. And just as the years have gone on, I've always like read stuff about Goodfellas and things like that. So you picking this, I was like, you know, I went through a massive phase of my life where I just watched gangster movies and I had them all on VHS, you know, everyone. I even had one like Lucky Luciano and people like that. And like, you look at The Godfather, Godfather 2, especially when they go to Vegas. I think it's the first one, actually, because Godfather 2 is more De Niro. When they go to Vegas and Hyman Roth, and it's supposed to be like Bugsy Siegel is the proper gangster who created Vegas, and he got whacked and all that. And it's just, I love so, you know, adhered to it all. I just absolutely love. And to be honest, I remember watching Untouchables with my cousin, which I watched before The Godfather and Goodfellas, and all I wanted was the full like more to be Kevin Costner, I suppose, but I always wanted the suit with the fucking spat shoes, Dave, and the fucking waistcoat and everything. You know, I always wanted that look. I remember my cousin did it. My cousin was older than me. He's about 16. And he started going to Manchester sort of late 80s. And he actually wore a waistcoat and stuff. We used to go, he thought he was fucking Ray Liotta or something, or, you know, Kevin Costner. But it's just, I don't know what it is about gangster movies, but I just love that era and everything. So this is absolutely, it's lit a fire under my backside again because I love gangster movies so much.
Awesome. Well, on that note, Chris, should we get into our trailer?
Let's go.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
I know I'd go from rags to riches.
To me, being a gangster was better than being president of the United States.
Never rat on your friends, and always keep your mouth shut.
It meant being somebody in the neighborhood that was full of nobodies.
Oh, you broke it, Jerry!
Hey, Mom, what do you think?
You look like a gangster.
By the time I grew up, there was $30 billion a year in cargo moving through Idlewild Airport, and believe me, we tried to steal every bit of it.
You might know who we are, but we know who you are. You understand?
Yeah.
What kind of people are these? Life is
but a dream. What do you do?
I'm in construction.
If we wanted something, we just took it, and you didn't even think about it. To us, it was better than Citibank.
Nice.
Great, but nice.
You got some nerve standing me up. Nobody does that to me. Who the hell do you think you are? Frankie Valli or some kind of big shot?
I was living in a fantasy.
Look at my
eyes. He's not Jewish.
Mazel tov.
For most of the guys, killing's got to be accepted. Murder was the only way that everybody stayed in line.
What are we gonna do with him? We can't just dump him on the street.
Don't worry, I know a place up safe. They'll never find him.
You got out of line, you got whacked. Everybody knew the rules.
Hey, Henry, here's an arm.
Very funny, guys.
Here's a leg.
Here's a wing. What do you like, the leg or the wing, Henry?
Okay, you ready?
Sometimes I...
For us, to live any other way was nuts. Anything I wanted was a phone call away. And we were treated like movie stars with muscle. We had it all just for the asking.
It's gonna be a good summer.
It was a glorious time.
That's powered by violence. On the streets where the violent have power, a new generation carries on an old tradition.
It In 1955, youngster Henry Hill becomes enamoured by the criminal life and mafia presence in his working-class Italian-American neighbourhood in Brooklyn. He begins working for local Capo Pauli, and his associates, Jimmy the Gank Conway, an Irish-American truck hijacker and gangster, and Tommy DeVito, a fellow juvenile delinquent. Henry begins as a fence for Jimmy, gradually working his way up to more serious crimes. Now, Chris, what do you reckon to the opening of this movie?
Well, Dave, as far as I can remember, I've always wanted to be a gangster. Love it. love the music, love the setting, everything. I think the young Henry Hill is not a bad play off Ray Liotta as well, the young teenage lad.
Good actor, isn't he?
Yeah, very good actor. And I like the little way he gets into it. Some of the things are brilliant. Like, he gets a fucking bad report and his old man's kicking off. Proper big, you know, Irish fucking at work. It looks like he works at the doctor somewhere. He's giving him shit. Next minute, fucking gangsters are there kicking the shit out of the postman. Yeah. You get anything? Is it not like put your ideas up at school? They just fucking absolutely lay into the postman and say, you better fucking intercept them letters from the school. And he gets the full suit, the spats thing. His mum's like, oh my God, Henry, you know, you're like a fucking gangster. And honestly, Dave, it just takes me back. I absolutely adore the setting of this, America, the New York, you know, all that gangster stuff. It's just brilliant. And I think the music's excellent. There's that scene where they go through the club and everything. It's so well done. It's all shot in one thing. It's just, yeah, Look, I'm going to coo over this movie completely this episode. It's not going to be much. I'm going to slate it because I absolutely love it.
So this is directed by Martin Scorsese, isn't it? You know, legendary filmmaker. And yeah, you can just tell. I mean, especially, like I said last week, you know, we must be the only podcast in the universe going from Deadly Ransom to Goodfellas. But just what an absolute change of pace, and just the way it's shot and everything. That club scene is amazing.
Yeah,
the amount of people there, and it just seems so authentic. You know, you're looking for someone picking their nose in the background or something, you know, so someone who's not quite in character, but it's nothing. It seems like a real living, breathing place, and I love the way that's shot and everything. And you can kind of see where Henry's coming from, can't you? Because he's got this shitty life. He doesn't just want to work for minimum wage, you know, basically be his dad. You know, he sees this kind of glamorous lifestyle and stuff. And the thing is, he takes a beating from his dad as well, doesn't he? He takes his punishment, and that's all part of it as well. You know, you've got to do that side of it as well. And so, yeah, I thought the opening was brilliant. But I talk about like Deadly Ransom, the kid actor. I'm sure he's quite old now.
Yeah,
be older than us probably. But I was so impressed with his performance. It actually made me think of Chris, weirdly. Conversely, Bloodsport. You know when you get the young Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Yeah.
And he gets caught stealing the sword, the katana sword, and he's like, are you going to call the cops? He's just such a bad actor. And I thought, oh, right, you know, you can have really good kid actors as well. So, yeah, and you can tell he was kind of getting into his new kind of adopted family and, you know, disowning the life that he previously had, you know, especially when he turns up in the suit. That's in the trailer, isn't it? You know, you look like a gangster. And he's like, yeah, fucking nailed it. but, yeah, I was just impressed with how it went. And I find the pacing of this movie a little bit inconsistent, because we spend quite a lot of time, it feels like, with this kid. I mean, it's a longish movie, isn't it? But we spend a lot of time before he gets kind of caught, you know, and then because he keeps his gob shut, doesn't rat out his friends, as Robert De Niro tells him, you know, he gets a lot of credit then, doesn't he? And then it's when we take a bit of a leap forward, and then we get Ray Liotta.
Yeah, we do, because he when he gets to court, doesn't he? And they're all there, aren't they? Paulie's there, who he's a bit scared of initially. And then all the gangsters are giving him the handshake, aren't they, and everything. And then it shows, as it pans forward, it pans to, obviously, Henry and Tommy, who's played by Joe Pesci. You know, I know we've mentioned this before, Dave. How the hell did Joe Pesci go from the fucking Wet Bandits or from Goodfellas to the Wet Bandits in 1 year? How the hell did he do that? And they both came out in 1990. I presume this was filmed first because he does look a bit younger. I'm sure there's a bit of makeup at hand there, but I think...
But the old wig as well.
Yeah, well, you know what I'm like, Dave. I've gone down a rabbit hole. 312 F-bombs in this and Joe Pesci says half of them. And literally all the script has been improvised in the whole movie. So Scorsese got with the guy who wrote the original book, Wise Guys, which is what this is based off, got together. They tried to get scripts together. What they did was they then give them scenarios and you'd have like De Niro, Liotta, and Pesci, especially Pesci's scenes. There was supposed to be 70 fucks in it, Dave, and he did 312. And he did about 140 or whatever it is, 150. But what they said is they would do a scene and give a scenario, and the dialogue that they came up with that they liked, they put that in the script, in like the reads. Then they'd say, right, do something else. Say, I don't like that, do something else. And everything he liked in each scene, he would then create it. He would create in the script on the fly from what they originally had from the screenplay. And he said a lot of the scenes are improvised, like the scenes where Paulie looks shocked because he hasn't got a clue what's going on. When there's a dead body and the mum sees the dead body, didn't know. And that's Scorsese's mum in real life. But there's loads of... I've just gone down a rabbit hole, Dave. You know what I'm like. I've been on IMDb, bloody Google. I've been on Wikipedia. Just reading some of the things, like when Henry rats them all out, eventually the guy who interviews him and Karen says he's going in witness protection is the guy who actually interviewed Henry Hill. He's not even an actor. He's actually a fucking government agent who they used in the film.
Right.
So yeah, this has got, if you go on IMDb for trivia and that, this has got probably one of the longest lists for movies you've ever seen, Dave. The amount of attention to detail that they've done and they've thrown in, even to De Niro wouldn't do a scene as Jimmy unless he spoke to the real Henry Hill, how he held his drinks, how he had his glasses on, how he stirred his sugar in his coffee, and, you know, just amazing, amazing attention to detail. But yeah, just, I find it fascinating. They've spent so much time with that sort of thing. That's what brings me, and it feels like it's a proper breathing world that I'm watching.
Yeah, and like you say, credit to Joe Pesci, because those two characters, like you say, both came out 1990, are so iconic. You know, all right, they're both criminals, but, you know, this one, playing Tommy, is so sinister.
Yeah.
and really, really threatening. That whole scene, I remember watching it as a kid, and I remember feeling so uncomfortable with that scene. Now, when I was watching it this time, you kind of know what's going to happen. And, you know, the Ray Liotta laugh is just so over the top. I can only assume then that this came out of one of those workshops that, you know, you just started doing this. You know, you think I'm funny, like, ha-ha, funny. I just think it's a brilliant, brilliant scene. Again, to just demonstrate, not only in the mob life, when you see various people getting whacked and that, but Tommy in particular is a fucking bit of a loose cannon, isn't he?
Yeah.
And I guess it's based on true events, isn't it? So I guess I'm just surprised that he got so close to being a made guy. You know, that seems like... The mafia or the mob or the different families and whatever, they're almost like companies, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're organizations with the head of the company, and then you've got different people who do different roles throughout the organization. But if you've got someone who's an absolute fucking loose cannon, you're in a precarious position. And I guess that's the way it turns out, isn't it?
Yeah, and what's interesting is that Henry Hill actually said that Joe Pesci got every single thing right from what he described to him about his character, Tommy. But the only thing different was Tommy was a bigger, thick-set guy. But he said the nastiness, the loose cannon, the swearing, you know, everything. He was so volatile. He said it was so uncanny when he watched the movie. So, yeah, he's the best. For me, he's the best character in the movie. Because De Niro, the movie runs at like 2 hours 14. De Niro, he's in it at the start, and then he's a bit of a lull while he's not in it for about 20 minutes or so. And then he becomes such a prominent figure within the movie. You know, up towards the end, he's in it, you know, obviously, you know, we have Tommy's story and how he's being made in that. But when they're together, like you say, they're laughing and all that. I tell you what, Dave, the cheeky bastards are fucking Matthew. It's like, yeah. And he's narrating, isn't he? And he's going, yeah, he goes, Saturday night's for the wives and that at the club, but Friday's for the girlfriends. And they've all got young pieces on the side. And I'm thinking, is this a good thing or is this a bad thing, Dave? You know, somebody's happily married. I'm thinking, I can't even handle my own wife, Dave, after 25 years. Do I really, you know, would I really go? But they've all got to have a girlfriend, haven't they, and everything. It's so well put together, because even when you watch, you've just gone down the rabbit hole of watching The Sopranos, haven't you? And you see with Tony Soprano exactly the same. You know, loves his family, loves his wife, but he's got so many side pieces throughout that story. Yeah. It's unbelievable, and it's like it's accepted, isn't it? You know, like his missus kicks off about him seeing some girls and that or whatever, and it's like, oh, next minute he's having a bit with her, and she forgets about it. It sort of reminds me the way the women are treated, a bit like what fucking footballers are like now, Dave, where they've all got side pieces and everything, and it's just a normal occurrence. I mean, look at Rooney. Nobody who's married to, in real life, if Rooney had cheated, like if you were a woman, 4 or 5 times like that, you'd have been divorced, wouldn't you, Dave?
Yeah.
And Colleen has just accepted it. I know we don't know everything that goes on behind closed doors and that, but he's been literally caught with his pants down numerous times with call girls and things like that. But same with the mafia. They just flaunt it, don't they? The same club. You take your wife in the night after, you bring your girlfriend. It's brilliant. Yeah. Like, it's such a true-to-life thing that they do. It's just, yeah, it's remarkable the way he's got it all together for me.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned Sopranos again, like as I did. But I couldn't help but do my Sopranos watch.
Yeah.
So straight away, I mean, I couldn't quite tell if Pussy was in there, but you definitely saw Paulie. Not the Paulie in this character, but Paulie from The Sopranos. You see him straight away.
Oh yeah, Paulie Walnuts. Like
he didn't have the wings then, but he was in there. But I kept getting a bit distracted, if I'm honest. So. Henry's girlfriend, Karen, or initially girlfriend and then wife, played by Lorraine Bracco, her voice, because she's doing a bit of the narration as well at times, isn't she? And the way she speaks and everything, I was just getting distracted because I could just hear her giving therapy sessions to Tony Soprano. And I remember hearing that. She did actually get offered the job of, what's Tony Soprano's wife called? Livia's the mum, isn't it?
Name's Edie. I know her real name as well. Edie, I don't know, Dave. I can't remember.
But Tony's wife. So she was offered that part, but she was like, well, I've sort of done the mob wife thing in Goodfellas. So, you know, she was the only big name really going into Sopranos. So, yeah, every time she spoke, though, I just found myself getting a bit distracted by that. But I do think she plays a good role. I'd kind of forgotten the whole issue with, you know, her family being Jewish and everything. And obviously, you know, very straight-laced on the, you know, right side of the law kind of thing. So, you know, it really doesn't go well initially when she's certainly when they move into the house with the parents for a bit. But you can tell that Karen is, you know, she's kind of seduced by the whole lifestyle, isn't she? And she even says that, you know, that, you know, when he beats up that bloke because he slapped her around a bit, you know, and he hands her this bloody gun, you know, and she says it turned her on a bit. It's like, that does feel like a line written by a bloke, to be honest.
Yeah. It's power in it. Yeah. That bit's great. When he pistol whips that guy, he's fucking tried it on with her auntie, his neighbor, who she'd met the scene before at the tennis club or whatever. And obviously Henry's just stands out like a sore thumb. He's trying to pay for the drinks with like fucking $50 bills, $100 bills. Yeah. And they're like, no, you put it on the tab sort of thing. But What's good about it is that they're very close-knit gangsters together, aren't they, the three of them? You know, Tommy, Jimmy and Henry, yeah, are good together. Tommy and Henry grew up together. Jimmy's like, you know, he's older than them. He's about 10, 15 years older, played by De Niro. And it works really well. But one of the best bits of the movie is that fucking guy. He's out of The Sopranos as well. Guy who they end up killing when he's in the bloody, come out of the joint, he's in the bar, they're all there. And he's like, to Tommy, hey, you know, I used to shine my shoes, and he's people laughing. And Tommy's like, I don't shine no shoes now, you know, and I don't think you've been told. And then you can see his friction, but you're thinking, it's all over, you know, it's not too bad, and blah, blah, blah. Because this guy remembers him as a kid. And then he just turns around and goes, yeah, go get your fucking shoe shine thing. And Tommy's like, fucking prick, fucking leave him here. And when he fucking levers him, when he comes back later on, and it's De Niro, Jimmy's fucking character's chatting away to him, and he's already said to him, like, you're out of order there. You give as good as you got. You know, you were disrespectful. Like, Henry doesn't realise that he's going to get killed. As soon as Pesci comes in, he knows it. Tommy comes in. But Jimmy looks like he might sort of stand in. As soon as Tommy clocks him, fucking there's fucking Jimmy stamping on his head. Fucking, oh, it's gruesome, isn't it? It's proper violent. Then he pulls the fucking knife out of the boot of the car because Henry's going, what's that noise? He's just like, and it's him trying to get out the boot of the car because he's still alive. Oh, Dave, you know, you've seen some gangster movies and that, and it's not the most gruesome thing I've seen, but in the context of the movie, it's just like Tommy is an absolute loose cannon. And when you find out he's a maid guy, well, that's like killing, like, you know, remember Lethal Weapon 2, Dave, the old diplomatic immunity, and he fucking shoots him. It's like that, and it's like a, you know, they're untouchable, basically. You cannot whack a maid guy. He's got to come from the top if that's going to come, and they're not at the top, are they? So they have to hide the body. And it's just...
I thought they knew he was a maid guy before.
They did. No, they did. But they had to get rid of the body and lie because they'd be fucked.
Right.
He was going to get his dues because he was taking the piss. One in Tommy was just so erratic and volatile. That guy knew the reaction. But yeah, because he's a maid guy, they've literally put a noose around their own neck if the people found out. You cannot do that.
He was a piece of shit in Sopranos as well.
Oh, is he more of a bastard in the Sopranos, wasn't he? But yeah, interesting character. Really, he just looks like a typical Italian mafia guy, though, doesn't he, Dave? Really good casting. And I think as the film unravels, when like Henry starts getting into the cocaine stuff, and I love the narration of it, how, you know, they get into it, and he's got his side piece. He leaves Karen, but then Paul is like, go back to your wife. So he's got both houses on the go. And Ray Liotta, like, this was his massive break, really. And apparently he turned down the part, Dave, of Two-Face in the 1989 Batman.
That was a good choice, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, a bad one to play Henry Hill. So he'd never directed. There was people like Tom Cruise on the line to play his character and all that. And apparently Al Pacino should have played De Niro's role and turned it down and said, he said, I didn't want to be typecast as a gangster. And then in the same year went and played that stupid gangster in Dick Tracy, Dave. And he said it's one of the biggest regrets of his career.
Yeah.
Because obviously De Niro did it. But yeah, when they get into the cocaine stuff and his eyes, I love the way he just looks like someone who's on coke. His eyes, he's trying to keep it together. He's doing the nose thing. And, you know, that's when they get arrested then, don't they? You get arrested just before that and get 10 years, don't they? Because it's an FBI typist. The guy they're going whack in Miami or wherever it is. And Tampa, and they get 10 years. And even in jail, though, I love when he's narrating and Paulie's slicing the garlic with the razor.
it's almost gave me a feel of like Tarantino or something. You know, when you can tell, you know, with an experienced filmmaker that they just take their time over this shit.
Yeah.
You know, so you just see the precision of the thin slices of garlic. And, you know, it's like a fucking holiday camp there, isn't it, to be honest? But, yeah, I thought that was a good depiction of how easy they had it in jail.
Yeah, it is. Because, I mean, Henry's got a full Adidas tracksuit, Dave, which I'd be proud to own now. You know what I mean? Like, it's a proper retro Adidas thing, isn't it? And, yeah, I think that, and when he comes out, you're sort of thinking, is he going to, you know, I know I've seen the movie before, he's not like thinking, is he going to turn it round? No, straight back into the cocaine business, Dave, completely gone. And so, in fact, as he comes out, we then get the thing with... is that before it? Hang on, I'm just trying to think now. No, Henry gets paroled. So Tommy, that's it. Yeah, Tommy then gets whacked, doesn't he? He gets told he's going to be a made man.
Yeah, and he gets what the full suit. What a bunch of cunts, eh?
I know. I mean, his mum, as I said, he's Scorsese's mum, but it's the... What's interesting, man, I was going to say before is, have you seen Casino? So
years ago, yeah. Just the once.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've only ever seen it the once. I always loved it, but I always remember Sharon Stone, which I had a thing for. But he plays the same sort of character, Joe Pesci. And ultimately, spoiler, his demise is pretty similar to Tommy's demise as well, Dave. He's an absolute loose cannon, and he plays an absolute bastard in that one. But in this, again, he's going to be a made guy. Family's mum's there. He's got the full, like, weird big shirt on. Them two guys take him into this fucking room in the back room of, like, some restaurant or whatever. And he looks around, and he just didn't go, and he just bang him out, don't they, straight away. Yeah. Just shoot him in the head. Very graphic. Hit the deck. And obviously Jimmy gets the call, then he's ringing up him, and Henry is together in that diner, and it's like he rings up and they're like, he's gone. There's nothing we can do. And he's like, what? He's gone what? He's gone. Nothing we can do about it. And then obviously Jimmy's crying in and everything. They realise that they knew he'd whacked that maid guy, and that's what came back on him. And it's the narration. Billy Bats, that's it. And that's a true story, as well. Yeah. So it's interesting how that goes, because from that point on, you know, Jimmy and Henry's relationship just falls apart, doesn't it? Like, you know, Henry's just a massive cokehead now, and he messes up that gun thing for Jimmy, and he has a go at him, don't he? Like, get off that shit. And that's when we get this whole sort of crescendo towards the end of the movie, where basically Henry is fucked, isn't he? And his whole life is just a mess.
And I like the fact that they shot him, or you get through the narration, don't you, that they shot him through the face. I probably should restructure my sentence there. It's not that I like that, but it gives you a window into, you know, this was a real message, you know, not just Tommy's obviously been whacked, but it's almost a message to the rest of the family as well. Get your fucking shit in order. If you touch an untouchable, if you take out a main guy, you're gonna fucking get taken out yourself, and not in a nice way. So they shot him through the face so he couldn't have an open casket at the funeral. And so, yeah, I thought from that moment, I guess I was surprised just how quickly Henry's relationship with Jimmy seemed to deteriorate. And what I thought was clever as well, there's a definite change in how this is edited. The way it's edited, and you chop from scene to scene, it's almost mirroring Henry, like, because he's erratic, isn't he? He's on his coke all the time, and he's massively paranoid, but with good reason as well. But, you know, he's just, I think it helps you get into his mindset, you know, and how fast-paced it is. But then, so yeah, I didn't think the relationship would go sour that quickly. But then when he gets the message, you know, subliminal message that he's going to get whacked himself, then he's only got one play to make, hasn't he?
Yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it? He knows he's got that whole day where you can see he's paranoid. He's definitely, you know, the drugs are not helping there, but he's basically getting followed by a helicopter, isn't he? Or so he thinks so, anyway.
Yeah.
And I think that just plays a massive part. And obviously the whole thing from the start is Paulie had said to him at the start of the film, you know, you don't rat on people. He got a lot of kudos when he went to, you know, the juvie thing, because he didn't grass on anyone. He took his fucking punishment, didn't he? That's the last thing you do in that situation. But it's when he's in the court, Dave, what I like in the court is he's there, he's sat there. They're like, right, Mr. Hill, you know, who's Jimmy, you know, Conway? And he points at De Niro. De Niro's got them fucking Dennis Taylor glasses on, and he's like looking at him. They've grayed his hair a bit, because obviously when they were inside and that, he comes out and he's, you know, he's like 4 or 5 years late or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then he points at Paulie, and Paulie's just sat there. But then Henry gets up, walks off thingy, because he starts talking to the camera, breaking the fourth wall, doesn't he?
Yeah,
we've only ever seen him narrate the story with his voice you know, and even she does it, his wife as well at one point. She does a bit of narration. But he looks straight at the camera, doesn't he? Which is towards, it's basically the end of the movie. But it's so interesting the way they've done that. It's such a good ending, you know, and I really appreciate that because you see De Niro's character like talking to his solicitor. I must admit, I got a flashback to Untouchables, Dave Al Capone, what a completely different character. But he's there chatting to him and they're acting as if he's not talking to the screen. Very, very well put together that. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was almost Ferris Bueller-like, wasn't it? Yeah. The way it just completely changed and then he's talking to us, the audience. And I think that's where it sort of went really fast then, didn't it? It was almost like he decided he's going to go into witness protection. It wasn't clear to me. I think his wife did go with him at the end, but, you know, she was certainly struggling with the concept of what witness protection was. It's like, well, what if my mum's sick or something, you know? Can I not see her then? Well, yeah, but then surely people will be able to get to you. So it seemed like she did go with him in the end. But all of that just, it raced along. And I think I wouldn't have minded seeing a bit more time with the likes of Paulie, with the likes of Jimmy, who've known this fucking kid for years, decades. And he's literally in court, pointing them out there, throwing them under the bus, ratting on his friends. I'd like to have seen a bit of fucking, not vengeance, but, you know, anger, frustration that you know, he's basically done what you're not supposed to do. And so it didn't do that. It just wrapped up fairly quickly. You went from the court scene basically to this suburbia, you know, wherever it is in America. It looks like it is pretty warm, pretty sunny. He's not slicking back his hair or anything and just blending into the crowd, into the neighborhood. So, you know, the thing that I'm struggling with, you know, this guy, Henry Hill, I keep wanting to say Harry Hill. How is he still alive, Chris?
I know.
How did he not, you know, he went into witness protection, but surely there are people in power who are fucking angry about what he's done. How has he not been taken out? I'm not, if you're listening to this, I'm not saying you should. I'm just saying because it is a real life person, I would have thought for doing something like that, there would be severe consequences.
Yeah, you know what though, Dave, it's right, because when you come out of the witness protection, you've fucked, aren't you? I mean, he passed away in about 2004, I think, Henry Hill, 2002. Yeah. But yeah, to get rid of your anonymity,
anonymity.
That as well. you know, but there's also, these are guys just come out of jail recently in the last like 18 months. Sammy the Bull was the actual enforcer for John Gotti. Now, he ratted on him. He ratted on all of them. He's fucking doing a tour of podcasts and that. Well, some of the others had sort of like, some of the other gangsters who were doing podcasts now talking about it, they're not happy about him at all. But he served his time, but he also got a lenient spell. He killed people. He was a proper assassin for the mafioso, like John Gotti and that. So it's really interesting listening to that. I mean, I must admit, Dave, if these people were alive now, I watch a few podcasts. There's a lad called James English, a Scottish lad. He's more of a reality TV guy. Went out with Jordan for a bit and all this. He interviews the who's who of English gangsters pretty much. He doesn't do a few American people and that on YouTube, but it's literally these people are just not anyone you want to mess with. And it's not glorifying being a gangster, but they're all been given a platform to talk, you know, about what they did and like just dead nonchalant. And apparently Henry Hill in his chats with the FBI and things like that, he was very outspoken about what he did. And when they killed that Billy Bats, like just passed it off. He was just sat there eating chips and that, just nothing. And this, when I've watched these interviews, they're like, there's some proper Manchester gangsters who I knew growing up, who I didn't know them personally, but you know, knew of them. You knew you didn't mess with them. You know, like yourself, where you came from and, you know, even in Manchester, you know these people whose names you hear and you're like, oh, well, you just don't mess with them. You know, if you see them in a pub, it's like, well, I'm not going in there tonight or I'm staying out of them. Yeah. And it's like a glorification of being a gangster. And I think watching these movies, as much as I love them, I can still take a step back and go, these people are pretty despicable. I mean, the amount of delivery drivers who they roughed up or paid off or, you know, like threatened, like that's no way to live. But that's what they did. The unions, you look at Sopranos, the unions is where the money was for years.
Yeah.
They muscle in on the unions, wanting to take everyone's union money. And then that would be actually feeding the illicit games they were doing, whether it be drugs or guns or whatever they were doing. All that union money that they paid every week was protected the workers, but it was basically just fueling everything to do with it. So it's really interesting how that all comes together. And no matter what gangster movie I watch, they tell it in a different way, but it all leads to the same scams they were doing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's like you say, the unions, construction.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what Henry says at one point when his girlfriend asks him what he's into, and the trash, taking out the trash.
The
trash routes, that seems to be a big area for them to dominate as well. So, yeah, I think what I liked about this as well, Chris, is just, again, having come off this Sopranos binge, all of the language, all the vocabulary, it's all the same.
Yeah.
You know, about getting pinched, being a made guy and everything. It's all the same lingo. And so you can absolutely see how this has influenced Sopranos for sure.
Oh, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So, Dave, shall we get into our review scores?
Let's go.
Dave, I applaud you again. Like I say, there was a dodgy little comment about me being on my knees at one point, but I do thank you for reigniting this, because I've absolutely loved going back and just reading the amount of info out there about this movie. And I'm not finished yet. There'll be all sorts. I mean, I'm probably going to go on a full Henry Hill fucking backlog now. There's going to be YouTube videos coming out of my fucking ears on my history and everything about all this, but absolutely brilliant. You know, I know you say about the pacing and that, and but for me, this is a perfect gangster movie. I still think The Godfather is my favourite of all time, but Godfather 1 and 2, but this is very, very close second. Absolutely pinnacle of Scorsese for me. The characters, the fact that they use different things based on a book. They met like Henry Hill, and they used a lot of what he said to influence how they played the characters. Absolutely brilliant. So, Dave, it is going to the top, my friend. It has to be a Cloud City for me, and I'm absolutely buzzing that we picked this one, or you picked this one.
I think that's probably the first Cloud City from you for a little while, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Just as I heard the words then, I'm like, oh, that feels new. No, I'm glad you enjoyed going back as well. And I have to say, this movie holds up brilliantly. The way it's shot, the way the editing changes to kind of mirror Henry and his life, you know, and his mindset at the time later on in the film, the music, the great acting performances throughout that whole ensemble cast, I think is amazing. Didn't mention as well, Chris from The Sopranos, obviously he gets taken out in there as well. That was his kind of big break, I think. So, you know, I just thought this was fantastic and enjoyed it way, way more than when I did when I watched it back in the early 90s. So, yeah, have to agree with you. It's a Cloud City for me. I think, yes, you'd have to say Godfather is probably better, but in our kind of 5-point system, I think it deserves to be at the top there.
Oh, brilliant. I can't argue. I absolutely loved it, Dave. So great, great stuff. So for next week, guys, we're not sure what we're doing yet. We're just waiting back for one of our amazing Patreons, one of you guys. So once we do, we will throw it in. So Dave, shall we just listen to that trailer anyway?
Well, yes. Insert trailer here.
Enjoy.
I'm going to show you something that's going to totally change your life completely forever.
She's a brunette from Southern California. And he's not.
I need romance. I need surprises.
A UFO landed in my pool. They captured me. I fed them Pop-Tarts, but you've got to cut their hair.
What did you say?
They may be from outer space.
So? They can still be dates.
I think we could just make them look more sort of human.
Hey, come on, everybody. We're doing a makeover.
But underneath, they're more than human.
Wow. You're incredible.
I could fix you up with some bodacious chips just like that.
I can't believe you're printing an alien in front of all these people. I'm going home with him.
Are we limp and hard to manage?
Wait a minute, are you like coming on to me?
Her boyfriend's a doctor.
I've never ever been unfaithful to you.
Whose treatment is totally alienating.
Here comes Dr. Love.
And her new love's an alien who's more than accommodating.
Do you own your own home or do you rent it?
Gina Davis, Julie Brown, and Jeff Goldblum in a film directed by Julian Temple and produced by Tony Garnett.
I just don't want you to think Earth girls are easy.
Earth girls are easy.
Now, normally, Dave, after the trailer, I'd be saying, I cannot wait, never seen it, never anything. So I'm not going to say that. I'm just going to say the generic Chris Phelps response of, it's not Lauren Avedon, Dave. So anyway, no. So we'll see what that is. Anyway, guys, so please bear with us on that. But absolutely brilliant, mate. Loved it. Massive thank you to everyone who supports us on the show. Please get over to Facebook. No, don't get over to Facebook. Get over to Twitter at the VHS Strikes Back. If you want to email us, thevhsstrikesback@gmail.com. If you want to support us a little bit more, get over to patreon.com/thevhsstrikesback. So today's roll call of honour is Dylan, Stephen, Trent, Dan, Justin, Susan, Timothy, Alec, Paul, Matt, Heath, Kent, Lucky Luna Green, Herb, Jax, Math, Blake, John Hammond, and Mr. Tony Farina. So thank you so much, guys. Now, Dave, do you want me to throw this over to you before we go with a quote? Have you got anything lined up?
I don't have anything lined up. Have you got one of your favourite quotes there? Go on then.
No, because I've sort of ruined it. My favourite line in the movie is the opening line. I absolutely love it. You know what I mean? So it's absolutely...
Yeah.
Hold on. Oh, yeah, what about this one then? So I'll do a bit of Joe Pesci. right, here we go. Oh, this is going to be the worst. I can already tell by the tone I'm going to try a Joe Pesci impression. It's going to be fucking rubbish. You know, Spider, it sounds like fucking the guy Home Alone. And you get to the count of fucking 3, 1, 2.
Ten.
Filthy animal. No, I can't do his fucking accent. You know, Spider, you fucking mumbling, stuttering little fuck. You know what? Hey, Spider, that fucking bandage on your foot is bigger than your fucking head. That's all I've got, Dave. That's a terrible impression. Makes no sense, but there you go.
Awesome. Well, thank you for keeping me entertained with that. And thanks to everyone out there for listening. And we'll speak to you next time.
Bye.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we going to do now?
What are we going to do?
Maybe we could build a fire, sing a couple of songs, huh? Why don't we try that?
We better get back, because it'll be dark soon, and they mostly come at night. Mostly.
I'll be back. That's not.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Wax on, wax off.
Ah! Ah! Get to the chopper!
One ring to go.
All right.
Ding, ding.
Bust you up.
Go for it.
Well, here we go.
Ain't so bad. Ain't so bad. Ain't so bad. Come on. Ain't so bad. Ain't enough. Come on.
You must be crazy or something.
I'm crazy.
You're just a stupid
fool. Yeah, maybe you're stupid.
You're crazy.
I ain't breathing heavy.
He's a fool. He's stupid.
I've seen you in 6 months.